Well, first, let me say I very much appreciate, still appreciate the opportunity to be here. You all gave me many positive comments yesterday. I appreciate that. Today, we're going to speak. Tonight, I'm going to speak on a topic that is more contemporary than what I spoke on yesterday, even as contemporary as television is. Social media. Really, we're going to do an introduction to it, as I jokingly call this social media for seniors. And I don't mean seniors in high school. And the reason I put this together originally is because most of the churches I go to are smaller country churches. And I'm usually one of the youngest ones there. And I'm 64, all right? And so grandparents and great-grandparents, they need some knowledge. Not a whole lot, but they need some. The very first time I did this presentation, it was at the Grace Street Church of Christ in Crockett, Texas. I've done it three times altogether there. And as I'm getting ready to do my first presentation, the most elderly man in the congregation, one of the elders, he told me, he said, "Delton, I don't need to pay any attention to what you're saying. I've raised my kids and my grandkids, and I now got great-grandkids, and this doesn't apply to me." So I said, "Brother Jones," I don't really remember what his name was, I said, "As old as you are, how many of your family members at your house at any given time?" And he says, "I got a house full all the time." And I said, "Well, this applies to you too. Because even if you're a great-grandparent or a parent, your kids, ever how old they are, still have a tendency to listen to you, at least sometimes. And so when we have the opportunity, I'm now a grandparent, when I have the opportunity, and it's not real often, to tell my kids how to raise their kids, which isn't very often, but when I have that, I do need to take advantage of it. And sometimes there will be questions about these kind of topics. So let me tell you why I put this presentation together the first time. I had had a presentation that didn't have anything to do with social media. This was about 10 years ago, 8 or 9 maybe. It was at the Taylor Street Church of Christ, Highway 95 Church of Christ in Taylor, Texas. And they called me up a few weeks later. And they said, "Brother McGuire," I was working at the children's home, not just right down the road. They said, "Brother McGuire, we want you to come back. We got families that aren't acting like families, and we need you to help with that." And so that led to the presentation that I'll be presenting tomorrow night. Tomorrow night is how to be an effective family. So please come back for that. But what I learned in the years since then is that social media is now a big issue. Now it's gonna sound like I'm bragging, but I'm not. I hold 4 certifications in social media marketing. I'm a professional fundraiser, okay? All right, that goes in that field. I still can't keep this stuff straight, okay? I mean, it changes so quickly that some of the things that I'm gonna discuss with you today are outdated. And I revised everything 2 months ago, and they're still outdated. So the best that we can hope for is to have a general understanding of what it's about. So let's talk about it. Why do I call this convergence? It is because I gave my wife my phone, otherwise I was going to have it in my hand. Everything is converged to that little phone. Everything I'm talking about tonight has to do with your cell phone. Pretty well everything. Why? Because your cell phone will do absolutely everything. When I was talking about this years ago, we said that we think this or we think this or we think this. Well, the research is out now. And I only cover a small piece of that research that is out there related to what's actually happened in the last 20 to 40 years related to this topic. But I'll give you some ideas that help you understand the significance of it. And I'll give you a few opinions too, as far as what I think has caused some of the changes that we're dealing with. But I want you to remember the term convergence, because that is the term that is used by the professionals now related to this. Your phone is a computer. My phone has Word, PowerPoint, Excel, all that on it, and 200 other things that I could put on there if I wanted to. I loaded FreeCell on there yesterday, all right? It's a game, y'all, okay, all right. You can talk, you can text, of course you can email, You can do anything that you can, anything. There's nothing that I can't do on my phone if I'm willing to deal with that little bitty space that I can't do on my computer in my office. Absolutely nothing. It's actually easier to print off my phone than it is my computer at the office, because I can send it straight to the printer. That kind of stuff still sort of fascinates me. Now, admittedly, though, when I say that, there's still a generation of us that are still awed by our phones. Every time I pick up my phone, I'm in awe of it, because it will do so much. I remember the first time I got to play with the smartphone. I didn't know they had invented them yet, okay? And I'm sitting there playing with this phone, and all of a sudden, I'm on the internet. I'm on the phone on the internet, okay? It just absolutely amazed me. You can use it for something besides talking to people, which is one of the fewest things, probably the least thing, that cell phones are now used for. So I want you to remember the term convergence. Now, as I mentioned yesterday, if you get the moral teaching side of this down with your kids and your grandkids, which if you teach them right and it sticks, every problem area we're talking about is not a problem area. The cell phone is not evil. Your television is not evil. Books and as a whole are not evil. It's what they have in them and what you go to when you get there. So the cell phone's not a bad thing. It's a tool. It's just an advancement on the other forms of mass media that we've had over the years. We've gone from writing or printing, all the various forms up to current time. Basically, what matters is the message that you allow yourself to receive. So I want to look at a biblical context for how we should act every day. For I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith for faith, as it is written, the righteous shall live by faith. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world and the things that have been made, so they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, for they became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images, resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. Therefore God gave them up in their lust of their hearts to impurity, to dishonoring of their bodies among themselves, because they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshiped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. Our phone can become an idol. The TV can become an idol. I truly believe, as that scripture indicates, I believe what the apostle wrote there when he said, we know God's out there. I believe it's in us, all of us, everybody in the world. I believe that you in your heart cannot deny that somebody and something made all of this. And we believe that to be our Lord God. But as we look at all the things we have to deal with in our world, and it's a confusing world, we have stuff thrown at us all the time, we need to remember that what really matters, and I know I'm preaching, but what really matters is, are we being faithful to our Lord? Sometimes we can be more faithful to our phone than we are to our Lord. And that's what this is really about. I can't talk very long without talking about the various generations. I don't go too much into this, but you do need to know, in case I reference it, that the different generations handle things different and they think differently. All right? And this is what most experts will agree the generations are. There's the greatest generation. That's my grandparents' generation. They're pretty well all gone. It's extremely rare to find anybody that had big, the youngest ones would be 90 years old. There's a few, okay, but not too many. That's the greatest generation. Then you got the matures or the silence. That's my parents' generation, Okay, dad was born in 28, mom was born in 33, all right? Then you got the baby boomers, and I'm smack dab in the middle. Well, I'm actually 2 months from the middle of the baby boomers. 46 to 64, I was born in 54, all right? Then you got the Generation X. That includes my oldest daughter, mine and Valerie's oldest daughter. She was born in 80. She really claims sometimes to be a millennial. Depends on what aspect it is. But that's those born from 65 to 80. By the way, that is also one of the smallest generations in time. Okay, we baby boomers didn't have a whole lot of babies. All right. Then there's the millennials. And what I find most interesting about the millennials is they were the problem child when I was doing this presentation 20 years ago. We didn't do nothing but badmouth millennials. All right? They were going to be the end of the world. Okay? Well, they're not. Okay? All right? The millennials now, let's see, if they're born in 81, that means they're 19 plus 19, they're 38 to 20, what is that, 21 to 38? Something like that. Yeah. They're 21 to 38. Soon they will be in charge. Okay? Now, for my generation, we used to cry about that. Okay? About the day the millennials were in charge. It's going to be okay. All right? They're being a lot more responsible than we ever thought they would be. All right? And that's a good thing. But the other thing that we suspected, I say that we, those of us that teach and present seminars related to generations, what we didn't know was what were their kids going to be like? That concerned us the most. And the research said back then, 20 years ago, that their kids were going to be just like them. And they were right. Okay? All right? Millennials' children think the same way as their parents. You might not think that if you're raising a kid right now, if you're a millennial and you're raising your kids, but as a whole, they think pretty well the same. The millennials are the most caring generation we have ever had. And I want to say that as a professional fundraiser. The millennials are the most caring, they're the most caring, sincere group about all the problems in the world that's ever been known, according to all the research. The problem right now is they don't have any money. Poorest generation in many, many decades. So the time will come when they're in charge and they'll have money. It's not there yet. That's the millennials. But what are we going to call that next group? What are we going to call the next group, which do differ in some ways from their parents? Here we've identified three names. iGen, Generation Z, or the Boomlets. Now, I'm considered a professional in this field, and I believe the name that will stick 10 years from now, we will be calling them the iGen generation. iGen. It's not the most popular name right now, but we didn't know what to call millennials forever. And now we just generally call them millennials all the time. Every now and then we'll call them Generation Y, but most of the time they're just called millennials. All right? iGen is probably what they'll be called. And what it means, what that stands for in its simplicity, is the Internet generation. And we're going to talk about why is the rest of the time that we have here. It's why are they called the Internet generation. So what's happened in the last 20 years that I've been doing this in one form or the other, as I quit talking about the as a whole, I quit talking about how to deal with the millennials. It's too late for that. They're grown-ups now. But what about their kids? What's happening with their children? And the cool thing is the research is now there. I don't have to say I think this. We call that anecdotal research, okay? I don't have to say I think this. I can actually prove many of the points that I'm going to make. The iGen. It is our children and our grandchildren who are currently roughly 7 to 20 or 7 to 21. It's the iGen generation. Let's change gears now and talk about social media. The purpose of what I'm now discussing is to give those of you who have no idea what most of these platforms are, what they are. I could spend an entire lecture on every one of them and still not cover most of the characteristics. And I'll be honest with you, I can't keep this stuff straight. First time I did this, I got Snapchat and Instagram backwards, all right? Because I don't use either one of them, all right? I do the best I can. But I redid my research to make sure I had this as correct as I could. I do know that the numbers I'm about to share with you are accurate. I verified them 2 weeks ago. So let's talk about these, and we're going to talk about the just the one or two sentence key characteristic of each one of these. What about Facebook? I want you to notice, people, how many subscribers that is and how many zeros there are there. That is 2,320,000,000 subscribers. Now, everybody says, our kids are giving up on Facebook. They're not. They're not as jumping into it as quick as they were before, but they're still somewhat on it. But here is my most telling statistic about Facebook. The most common person signing up for Facebook today, 54-year-old grandma. And that's true. What do we use Facebook for? What does my generation look Facebook for? My younger daughter, posts something about every other day, the ones we're staying with right now in Mansfield. About every other day, there's pictures of, I watched a video yesterday of our 3-year-old grandson running to second base in his first T-ball game, all right? That's what Facebook is good for our generation. We love it. I check Facebook second every day after I check my emails. And notice I don't even like text, but they're there, all right? So Facebook has, it's just big. Facebook is really, really big, and it's not really going downhill. Some people say it is. What is the primary purpose? How do they make their money on Facebook? Advertising, all right? Which generation still has money? The 54-year-old grandma, okay, all right? So Facebook is not hurting from that perspective, all right? Yeah, they might not have all the teenagers on there anymore, but they still got all the people that have money. And that's what they're trying to do is advertise. Facebook's social impact has also changed the way we communicate. We think about it, how much, I don't care who you are, how much you probably use Facebook. Now, there'll be some of you in here that'll very proudly raise your hand and say, I don't do it yet, or I don't do it at all. I'm sorry, you're an extreme exception, all right? Because we do it. Facebook has changed the way we communicate. Rather than having to reply to others through email, Facebook allows others to just broadcast and share things about their lives and therefore engage others in other ways. I used to be called a Facebook Scrooge. If you weren't blood kin to me or I was worried seriously about offending you, you weren't my Facebook friend. I kept 30 Facebook friends up until a year ago, all right? Then I decided, I'm in public relations, y'all. That's rude, all right? So now I will let a few of the other relatives in, and because I'm a minister, I will let other preachers in, all right? Okay. And then if they post more than twice a day, all right, I cut them off again, all right? I got one that was posting 20 times a day. I'm sorry. I hit him, okay? All right. But that's the way we communicate. That's the way we communicate. Facebook is important to us. When I pull up my phone and did it, and I did just a while ago, right before he was coming in here, I pulled out my phone. I looked to see how many Facebook new messages do I have. I had 5, okay? And I looked at the pictures that were there and went about my business. We like Facebook. But there's a downside of Facebook, and it has to do with self-esteem. What is the main thing we as adults use Facebook for? Bragging. Really, it is. Okay, why do I share those pictures of my grandchildren? Why do I do that? Because I want everybody else to think my grandchildren are as cute as I think they are. Okay? Or if I go on a vacation, or if I have a trip, or something happened at work that was cool, okay? We brag about it on Facebook. Now, I'm not saying that's not justified sometimes, but what about if you're on the other end of that and you're having problems at work that you can't resolve, or your grandchild is ill, or you don't have grandchildren? There's all sorts of other reasons for you to feel bad about those things that are there. And that is a serious issue with Facebook, is the fact that one of the reasons that depression has increased. We talk about this a little bit later as we talk about our children. But one of the reasons depression has increased among adults is because of Facebook. What about YouTube? It's an American video sharing website. Somebody asked yesterday, is this social media? Technically, only technically, YouTube is not considered social media. Why? Because you don't talk back and forth. Okay? You don't You don't share things as quickly. But for all practical purposes, YouTube is social media. It's a video sharing website. Notice that 1,800,000,000 users every month. I love YouTube, okay? YouTube is cool. If you want to learn anything, go to YouTube. Now, it is the most popular online destination for teenagers. That means YouTube has all the rest of them beat by far. Instagram, Facebook, all of them. YouTube has them all beat. It has to do with one primary concept that our children, a primary thing that our children don't want to do. What is it our children don't want to do? Read. Okay? All right? And if you can go and look, talk to any teenage boy that has to write a report. They'd rather go watch it and see and learn it on a YouTube rather than researching it in a book. Because it's a lot harder to find it in a book. Y'all, this is wonderful. We have 20 acres of land out in East Texas, and I purchased a service pole so that we could get electricity. And I put it in the ground right, and I did everything good, and they came and wired it in. Well, I needed to attach it to the old beat-up travel trailer we have out in the woods. It really is an old beat-up travel trailer. Sorry, Valerie, I'm not supposed to say that. Okay. It's bad, all right? But anyway, I still wanted electricity for it, all right? I watched 11 YouTube videos on how to wire that service pole to my travel trailer. Why? Because I didn't want to get killed, all right? And I was dealing with 440, all right? It worked, and the mobile home hadn't burned down yet, all right? That's what YouTube is good for. You can learn anything. Think of it, and you can find a video on it. They say, one research says that if you try to watch everything that will be placed on YouTube today, it'd take you 54 years to watch it all. That's today's input, all right? It's there. So YouTube is a really, really big deal, especially for our teenagers. They love it. There's some problems with YouTube. Porn is prohibited on YouTube. And we talk a little bit more about pornography, I think it's today. But links to porn sites and vulgar comments are ignored. In other words, you're rarely going to find a video on YouTube that is offensive. But what somebody else said about that video may be offensive. Or, yet they say, hey, if you like this, go to this site. And you're very, very quickly in pornographic sites as well. So the problem with YouTube is not the videos themselves. The problem is the comments and the places that the comments may lead you to. If there's that many videos a day, do you think anybody has time to monitor all the comments? No, it is physically impossible. They can't hire enough people to monitor it. So therefore, be careful of those comments when your child goes to places. That's the real problem. Censorship is poorly regulated in the comments and the links. Instagram, 1 billion subscribers. Porn is often reported on Instagram. I'm not even sure if I have an Instagram account or not. Our kids like it. It's not the most popular, of course, YouTube is, but it's a place where our children go to send messages. Twitter, it's an online news and social networking service. It is used mostly by older adults. It used to be, when it first came out, that our teenagers and young adults were using it. Now it's mostly older adults using it. We're all now familiar with Twitter because somebody else we all are familiar with uses it very, very often. Okay? All right? I won't say anything about his Twitter usage. But I sometimes wish he didn't. But it's used mostly by older adults. 68 million users per month. I have a Twitter account. But what I do is I just tell my Facebook to automatically transfer over to Twitter, and it will transfer the first so many characters. Okay, and go from there. All right. Twitter's good for some people. All right. What about Snapchat? 190 million users per day. This is photo, and this is for those of you that aren't familiar with it. The photos and the videos usually disappear in about 10 seconds. That's the reason the kids like it. It's because they put it on there and the evidence theoretically disappears. 30% of youth users claim that they use it because their parents don't know how to use it. I believe that, okay? Average per day use for each child that uses Snapchat is 18 times per day. 63% of all American teens use Snapchat every day. So, you might want to have the ability to somehow monitor, if you have the ability to do that, monitor your child's Snapchat account. It is pretty well impossible to do it, though. But let me tell you something else. If your child does something that's illegal, the fact that it disappeared on Snapchat's not going to make any difference. When I do these presentations, I've done a lot of them, the first two groups of people that come to talk to me afterwards are the teachers, with all the problems they're dealing with related to what I'm talking about. And second are the police officers, telling me that something I already knew, which is nothing ever really disappears. And that's something that we talk about some of the dangers in just a moment of the internet, but your children need to realize that. Nothing ever really disappears. I Googled myself in 2002, and I had I'm the only person with my name in the country, by the way, all right? So I Googled myself, and I had two postings on there. One was about a conference that I did yesterday's presentation at in Amarillo, and the other one was about my syllabus for a class I was teaching at Clarendon College. Did you know I can find both of those right now? And that was 2002, among the 245,000 hits I have now for my name. When you do these seminars, it gets spread out all over the place, okay? Nothing ever really disappears. Remind your children of that every now and then. Nothing ever really disappears. And if you don't believe me, go ask a police officer. It ain't easy, but he can do it. Pinterest. I call Pinterest the sissy channel. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be sexist here. Yeah, I really do. But Pinterest is 83% female users. I haven't figured out what they do with it yet. I do have a Pinterest account. I have played with it. I don't know what it's good for, but it's mostly posting. Somebody tell me what it's good for. Yes, ma'am.
Decorating.
Crafts. Okay. All right. I mean, it's cute stuff. What's that?
Fashion.
Okay. It's mostly pictures. Okay. Yeah. Photo sharing. Mostly pictures. Okay. And what's that?
Exercise.
Okay. All right. It's got a real purpose, okay? 250 million subscribers, and that means that about 200 million of them are women, okay? LinkedIn. Google now owns LinkedIn, by the way, and that changed a lot of things, all right? It's a business and employment-oriented social networking service that is mainly used for professional networking. It includes employers posting jobs and job seekers posting their resumes. It is difficult to stay on LinkedIn and not post your resume, even if you're not looking for a job. LinkedIn sort of forces you to put a resume of some sort on there. Why? Because it's for business people to talk to business people. Yes, I have a LinkedIn account. Yes, I've used it for job searches. Is it significant for anybody that works in a social situation at work? Yes. If someone is looking for an employee, and you don't want to use one of the monster jobs or Indeed or one of those other sources like that, then LinkedIn is the place that you can go. You may end up paying for it, but LinkedIn is the place you can go. LinkedIn has 260 million users, but what I didn't know until last month is 40% of them are not within the United States. That's the reason I get a lot of requests to be connected, I think that's the term for it, to connect on LinkedIn from places I don't even know where are. Okay, and so it's an important site, but it's mostly a business site. And for some people it's important, and for some people it's totally unimportant. Okay, Now we're going to look at some serious research. A book came out August of year before last, August of 17, okay? And I thought this was the coolest book related to this topic that ever came out, and it probably still is. You're looking at the front cover. It's called The Smartphone Generation, A Statistical Report. The constant presence of the internet, particularly social media, is changing the behavior and attitudes of today's teens. And what they did, so that those of us that lecture on this topic could quit saying we think this or we think that, they took, I think it was 10 longevity studies over a 40-year period, or it could have been, 10 longevity studies over a 40-year period, and came up with what's really happening related to our phone and our children. The subtitle, iGen, Why Today's Super Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious. Now, I'm going to tell y'all something. There's some positive here, all right? Less rebellious, more tolerant, less happy, and completely unprepared for adulthood. And what that means for the rest of us. I don't think I've got this statistic in there. Did you know, according to the researchers, and you can look this up on your own if you don't believe me, our children are maturing 5 years late. Our children are maturing 5 years late. Within the school system, talk to any school teacher. The seventh graders are acting like second graders. The high school seniors are acting like they're in junior high. And I'm not making this up, y'all. That's what the teachers are saying pretty consistently. The colleges are telling us the same thing. They're just not growing up as fast. And some of what we're going to look at now is the cause of that, and some of it we really don't know what's caused it. But as a whole, according to the experts, our children are maturing 5 years late. That's scary stuff. Why? I want you to notice here, there's about 30 charts like this in this book. And if you're interested, it's a fascinating book. But for every one of these, that line right there, that's the day the smartphone came out. That's when the smartphone came out. It changed everything. There's another reason everything changed. But that is the key one. This is not hanging out with friends. That you can't read all the fine print. That top line is 12th graders and how often they hung out with their friends. Notice it pretty well, mostly level. The iPhone came out and it started going downhill. And it's still going farther downhill. Now, why would the iPhone make a difference? And this is the answer to the question for almost all the rest of my slides. Where do our children spend their time now with their phone? In their bedroom, in their room, or at the house, someplace, but not socially. Our kids have become almost unsociable. And they've pretty well proven that it all started with the smartphone. Why? I told you, it's a convergence. Everything's there. You can do anything. You can talk. You can text. You can play games. You can play on the computer. Why do you need to go socialize for? All right? What about feeling lonely? Y'all do know we have an epidemic of suicide in this country among teenagers. Part of this is caused, look at the pivot there, okay? Now what happened? When the iPhone came out, it was released in 2007, it went from going down a little bit to skyrocketing up. This is depression level among, the top line is the depression level among high school seniors, or it says they often feel left out. Why? Again, it's because they're not socializing. Less likely to get enough sleep. Go to bed on time. Leveled out for a while. Then it looks like at about 12 or 13, it started going back up. Part of that is because they changed the availability of games, how easy it was to put games in your phone. Y'all remember when it's hard to put a game in your phone? Okay? Now you can almost not do it. It's hard not to do it. All right? It took me all of 20 seconds to load FreeCell in my phone the other day. All right? Not getting enough sleep. But this is my favorite. For those of you, I'm going to back up. I don't want you to see that yet. For those of you that are similar in age to me, What did you do on your 16th birthday? What's that? Driver's license. I don't remember how I got out of school that day to go get my driver's license. But I know I was at the DPS office at 3 o'clock and school wasn't out yet. All right? I probably drove illegal to get there. All right? Because I did have a driver's license. There was nothing to my generation, and I'm in the middle of the baby boomers. There was nothing more important to us than as a teenager than the day we got our driver's license. All right? The statistic here, if I can remember it correctly, for my generation, 80% of us had our driver's license at the beginning of our senior year of high school. 80% of us had our driver's license at the beginning of our senior year of high school. Now, 60% of the high school seniors in America now do not have a driver's license. iPhone was part of that. I'm going to get into some dangerous territory now. What else happened a few years before this to cause a dramatic change in the way we raise our kids? There's one thing that changed. People don't realize how much this one thing changed the way we raise our kids. September 11, 2001. It changed. If you study the research, it is absolutely fascinating how much it changed the way we raise our kids. Because what was Mama going to do now after September 11 if her kid wanted to go somewhere? She's going to say, he's going to say, can I get in the car and go? And she's going to say, no, I'll take you. Can we go wander around in the mall, Mom? No, you need to go someplace safer where you won't be abducted. Can we go do this? Can we go do this? Can we go do this? The term that we use for that is helicopter parent. Helicopter parents became the norm after September 11, 2001. I'm not saying that's good or bad, but if you wonder why some of these numbers are dramatic as they are, it's because of our, as parents, our fear of what might happen to our children. Now, with all the things that are happening in the world right now, is that getting any better? No. We're more frightened now than we were then. That just gave us an excuse to get started on being frightened. I can't give you a solution to any of that. I'm sorry. But I'm just telling you because I don't want to misspeak that the phone is the cause of all of this. It's not. September 11, 2001 is the cause of the rest of it. You can just deal with that as it is. No rush to drive. We explained that. Look at how it pivots when the phone came out. Now, they're not dating as much. All right? We all know that marriage, the average age of marriage is just, it's way up there now compared to what it used to be. All right? It's moved up 4 or 5 years for both men and women. I'm not sure what the number is, but it keeps moving up. Part of it is because they're waiting longer to date, lots of other social reasons, all right? But there's a plus on this. Do even teenagers normally drink by themselves? No. If they're going to get drunk, they'd rather do it with their friends, all right? So alcohol usage has gone down significantly among teenagers as a whole. Remember I told you all the other day we're statistically normal? Okay, all right. So alcohol use has gone down. Okay, what about sex? Isn't that a social thing? If you're never around anybody, is it going to happen? Okay. And so it has gone down as well. Sexual activity among teenagers has dramatically decreased because they're by themselves all the time. All right, let's talk about three relevant dangers of this. Sexting. I spend a lot more time talking about sexting than some people think I ought to. But y'all, it's dangerous. Sexting is, let's see, I've got the definition here. It is sending, receiving, or forwarding sexual photos or sexually suggestive messages through text message or email, also Instagram and Snapchat, okay? Usually drawings, photographs, or videos. In a national survey, about 20% of teens admitted sending a sexual photograph and 40% admitted receiving them. Of the 20% that received them, 5% of them forwarded them somewhere else. This is sending nude, semi-nude, suggestive photographs of you, typically, to somebody else. It is most often boyfriends send it to girlfriends, girlfriends send it to boyfriends. Our kids don't realize how dangerous this can be. A number of years ago, a teacher at a school in Tennessee, this was a national news article, he picked up a phone from a young boy, and on that phone, he turned it on, and there was a semi-nude picture of the boy's girlfriend, who was 16 years old. He called the sheriff. That's what he needed to do. This is child pornography. Who went to jail? Who went to jail? He did. The teacher did. Why? He was in possession of child pornography. Now, the law is sort of almost caught up on this now. He spent 5 weeks in jail. All right? And now the law is beginning to change on that. That was quite a while back. I was the director of a children's home. Do we ever have this happen? Probably. Okay? I wasn't going to find out. All right? So if I thought it happened and I picked up a kid's phone and I thought there was something bad on it, what did I do? I called the sheriff. We lived out in the country. Sheriff's who you call. All right? I called the sheriff, and if he wanted to turn that phone on, he could turn that phone on. I wasn't going to do it because I wasn't going to go to jail for that. Okay? But that's how serious it is. Our children, as it says here, 40% of the children overall admit that they've seen these photographs. It is dangerous, dangerous stuff. You need to remind your kids of that. They simply don't know how illegal it can be. The peak age is 16 and 17, and then it quits after they turn 18. Now, why does it, okay, doesn't take a genius to figure this one out. Why does it quit when they turn 18? Because then they're going to go to jail for it. And they're smart enough to know that. So they probably know that it's illegal. But they also know if they're a minor, they're probably not going to do time for it. They could, but they probably won't. All right. There's some emotional side of this. The messages or the photo getting to the wrong people. We're going to talk about cell phone bullying or cyber bullying in a minute. Okay. This is where it can start. If you've got a bad photograph, one that a friend of yours has it, and or not a friend, but someone that doesn't like you has it, and they say, if you don't do this and this and this, I'm going to blast this photograph on Facebook. Now, Facebook may take it down in 10 minutes, but how many thousands of people have already seen it before they take it down? All right? The message of the photo gets to the wrong people. Reputations can easily be ruined. Legally, the person sending may be prosecuted for distribution of child pornography, and the person receiving may be prosecuted for being in possession of child pornography. This is real serious business, y'all. Real serious business. And our children need to be reminded that the federal government is not real. Their interpretation of what may be improper may be something you think might be semi-proper. All right? Their standards are different. If any person in that photograph is under 18 years old, somebody's going to go to jail, more than likely, or at least get in trouble. One of seven, let's talk about predators now. We're through talking about sexting. And when I get through, I will have time for questions, if you'll remember them. Let's talk about the next issue, which is online predators. This is an area that I get requests to greatly increase. But I only talk about it nominally because I've never dealt with it directly. I've been in child care for most of 30 years. I've never actually had to deal directly with predators. I know that they're there. I just haven't had to deal with it. And I don't like to talk about things that I'm not real familiar with. So I cover this because it needs to be covered. Am I an expert in online predators? No, I'm not, because I haven't had to deal with it, which is probably a blessing that I haven't. But let's look at the gist of it. 1 in 7 kids will receive a sexual solicitation online. Again, our kids are statistically normal. 1 in 7 will receive a solicitation online. 44% of the sexual predators are under age 18. We think it's all dirty old men doing this. And it is a whole lot of dirty old men doing this. I watch the crime shows, all right? It's there. But 44% of them are typically teenagers. I think it says here, yeah, of those, 75% of them are boys. 75% are teenage boys, 25% are girls. No, that's the victims. I'm sorry, I read it wrong. The victims are usually 13 to 15, 75% victims are female, 25% male. It all starts by asking for a picture, leading to a request for sexual pictures. It all starts off as innocent. When you have a new friend or someone comment on Facebook or related to an email or a text, often you don't know anything about them. And you need to be careful. You need to be careful even as an adult about what happens there, related to viruses and things of that sort. But your children need to be especially careful. And they need to be warned to be careful about who they are talking to or communicating with. It says that 14% of all high school students at some time have agreed to meet a stranger they met online. That's exceptionally dangerous. It gets real bad real quick. This scares me, y'all. This scares me. How easy it is for our children to be led by someone that they otherwise think they should trust just because they met them in a friendly place on the internet. Risky behavior and clues. These are things you need to look for. If you see these, you need to pay special attention. Posting personal information. Don't get me going on that one. I'm a fundraiser, y'all. I can find out anything about you I want to find out about you. Pretty well anything. I can find out if you got a dog in your house or not. I can find out what kind of magazines you read, and I can figure out who you voted for. And that's without trying very hard. Don't let somebody get other information that will give them the ability to steal your identity. That's part of the problem here. Your children will tell people too much. A lot of times they will tell people too much because they trust them. Interacting with strangers online. If you see someone they're interacting with, ask them who they are. Ask them when they met them, where they knew them from school or from church or whatever. And if they can't say, oh, I just met them online, you need to be careful. Placing strangers on buddy lists, sending personal information directly to strangers, visiting pornographic sites, and talking about sex with strangers. That's just the start of the list. Warning signs. They're secretive with their online activities. They're obsessive about being online. They get angry when they can't get online. And they get calls from people you don't know. Watch for those things. It could happen to any of our children. When I started back doing presentations the second time after I stopped for 5 years, I sent these cards that I send out all over the place. I got one phone call on the third day, the day that preacher got it. And this was a large Church of Christ in Mississippi. The preacher is one of the most honorable, respectable men in the state. And his 16-year-old daughter got caught up in the middle of all of this, quite by accident, to the point where she is being bullied and being threatened sexually. He called me the day he got the card, told me to come talk about this. It can happen to any of us. Other warning signs. Gifts and packages from people that you don't know. They withdraw from their friends. They change their screen names or turn off the computer when an adult walks in the room. And they download pornography online. I know that most of the time our kids are doing all this on their phones. But let me tell you, we're going to talk about safety in a little bit. If you got a computer at the house and that's where your kids go to get online, I'm going to give you the best safety tip there is. It's called the kitchen table. The kitchen table is where your computer needs to be if you've got a computer in your house. Because everybody will watch what they're doing if it's on the table. Now, I've only got one slide for cyberbullying. Y'all know what that is? That means somebody's using something online to bully you, to make you do things you might not want to do. I'm going to give you one story. I did this presentation at the Jersey Village Church of Christ in Houston for Vacation Bible School. Similar format to what we're doing here, almost identical. When it was over with, I was meeting with all the roughly 14 kids and their mothers about what we did and how we did it. Was having lunch together afterwards. And I did a survey. And I said, here's the 35 things that I talked about this week. I want you to tell me what is most important, which ones you're most concerned about. And cyberbullying was one of them. Not a single mother put it down in the top five. Not a one. Every boy put it down as number one. Every boy put it down as number one. And most and all the girls had it in the top five. What did that tell me? Tell me that the parents, the moms, were totally clueless about what their children were dealing with when it came to this topic. So my advice for you is talk to your son. He is not going to come to mama and say, Mama, I'm being bullied by my friends on the phone. That's not very macho, y'all. All right? He doesn't want to admit that to anybody. So ask him about it. Or ask your daughter about it. Is anybody messing with you on this? And then do what you can to deal with it. To me, the biggest problem with cyberbullying is the parents don't know it's happening and therefore don't do anything about it. It does happen. Every single boy put it as number one at the Jersey Village Church of Christ VBS. That says something. Other risky behavior. Partying pictures. If you're going to interview for a job as an adult, what do you think the odds are that your future maybe boss checks you out online? What's the first place they're going to go to? Facebook. Okay. Second place they're going to go to is probably LinkedIn, if you have a LinkedIn account. Are they going to look in other places for that for you? Yes. What if you did something that's questionable? Or you, as number three here, you maybe weren't dressed totally proper for that event. Or, who was it, the famous swimmer, Phelps, okay? Is he caught smoking pot? Okay, all right. Did that do his reputation any good? No, not at all. Okay, all right. Be careful. Your children need to be told to be careful what they put on Facebook or anywhere else. Partying pictures will last forever. They never, ever really go away. And you don't want that causing you not to get the job you want or the opportunity you want just because you did something stupid when you're 16 years old. But it does happen. It happens a lot. I've been an employer. I've hired people. And the second thing I look at after I look at their resume or the application is their Facebook page. It tells you what's important to them. Comparing yourself is another problem with the wrong stuff on there. You can't keep up with everybody else. Over-sexualized clothing is a legitimate problem. Viral video attempts, that's someone that I wasn't familiar with. What this is, and it's actually more common than we want to admit or that we're aware of, and that says teenage boys trying to get a video that will make them famous. And you know what happens 20% of the time? They get hurt or killed. They get hurt or killed about 20% of the time. Not always killed, but they get hurt. Because they're doing stupid stuff. So that's something you need to warn your teenage boys about. Be careful. Be careful. Don't do anything that you're going to get hurt as you're trying to make that world famous viral video. And humiliating others. As adults, we're not real bad about that, but our kids are pretty bad about that sometimes. They say bad things. They put someone down and so on. It's part of that bullying part. We can't. How much time do I have left? What time am I supposed to be through? Anybody know? Okay, thank you. You can't talk about the internet and not talk about pornography. And I, for those of you that know that there's kids in the audience, I will be careful what I say here. But some sources indicate that porn sites are the single largest use of the internet now. I believe that to be true. They exceeded emails about 4 years ago as a single most consistent use of the internet. While about half of Americans over 25, the grown-ups, believe that it is basically wrong for our children, or those that are 13 to 24, our young adults, only a third of them believe that it's wrong. They've become conditioned. We talked about that the other day, to believe in that it's okay. Why? Because it's so common. Most teens and young adults view, now I want you to catch this. This is from the Barna studies. This is a serious, legitimate study. Most teens and young adults view using porn as less wrong than not recycling. What does that say about our culture? Okay. The average age for a child to start consuming hardcore pornography is 11 years old. We are statistically normal. 4 out of 5 16-year-olds regularly access porn online. And it's not just boys. It's almost got almost as good a chance of being girls as it does boys. 7 out of 10 accidentally come across it online. Don't think your kids, I don't care how old they are, don't think they haven't seen it. Because if they're just tapping miscellaneous on the computer and tap the wrong buttons, it's going to come up. You don't have to be looking for it. Not at all. Because there's so much of it, it comes up accidentally. 24% of teens aged 14 to 17 have been involved in some kind of naked sexting, as we talked about earlier. 20% of teens have sent or posted nude or semi-nude photos or videos of themselves. And I hope, sincerely hope, your kids aren't normal. What can we do to prevent some of this? I mean, it's obviously a serious problem. There are a lot of tools, and I'm now how to prevent many of these problems we talked about, not just pornography now. There are a lot of tools available for your PC or your child's phone that allow you to monitor their internet activities and to limit the sites they go to. The kids can slap me for this when it's over with, but I'm going to tell you what I really believe to be the truth. Our children do not have constitutional rights. Our children legally do not have the same constitutional rights you do as an adult. That I can honestly say. I can prove it. They don't have the same constitutional rights you have because most of our rights, our serious rights, come into play as adults. If we're not adults yet, who's in charge? The parents. Remember that. Don't let your child, I hate to hear a 15-year-old say, well, you're interfering with my rights. I'm sorry, who gave you that right? Okay? We are still in charge if we're doing things right. It upsets some of the people that are hearing this. It's going to definitely upset our children, but it's the truth. Okay? Your child's phone, I don't care whose phone it is or what it is, it has the ability for you to program it to do certain things and not do certain things. All right? It has the ability for you to put codes in it where they can't do this and this and this and this. I personally don't know how to do it because my kids were grown by the time the cell phone came out. All right? But they're there. Get out the owner's manual. Look it up online if you can't find yours. And look to see how to do it. It's hard. It really is hard. It's harder finding the owner's manual than it is fixing it, all right? But think about doing that if you're concerned about your child going to places online they're not supposed to go to. The monitors are there in their phone automatically for all phones. Different levels of quality, but they're all there. Pay special attention to the games and chat sites which are not child-friendly. We won't get to it today. We're going to talk about video games on Thursday, and we'll talk a little bit more about that at the time. Go to the places on the internet that they go. In the old days, I'm talking about 10 years ago, the one thing that I spent 5 minutes teaching you to do was either, I would have done this last time I was here, either how to determine one of two things, where your child had been or how well they had learned to hide it. One of the two. The technology has now gotten to the point where they can hide it super easy. They can get around you. They can erase everything so quick. They can program their phone to erase everything they've done for the last week or for the last 10 minutes the second they turn the phone off. And it's gone. You're not going to find it. That's the downside of trying to monitor what your children are into. It's not as easy now to monitor it as it used to be. But do what you can. especially if they're doing their internet work or whatever on a PC. It's still easier to monitor it on a PC. Tell them, instruct them. Do not erase your history. They may not listen to you, but tell them not to do it. And then you can tell where they've been. Monitor your child's usage. Use the tools that are available. Start with the Apple or the Android profiles that you can set up on their phones. My understanding is all of us only have one or two kind of phones, right? We either have an Apple or an Android. I think that's the only two that kind there are. All right. They've all got monitors, the ability to monitor those phones. So take advantage of that. Recent developments. Recent, about a year ago now. Children under 13 can now have Facebook accounts. Last time I was here, I would have told you, I would have said this out loud. If your child is under 13 and have a Facebook account, somebody committed federal fraud. Because it was against the law for any child under 13, under any condition, to be on Facebook. And yet we all had 10-year-olds with Facebook accounts. That was illegal. That means you or they committed federal fraud because you lied on an interstate commerce machine, which is what your computer is. All right? Now they're allowing kids under 13 to have a Facebook account, but you as the adult, as the parent, have to maintain control of that. You have to set it up. You have to put the conditions and the places they can go on there. So if you've got a kid that's 10 years old and wants a Facebook account, they can have one now. But make sure you'd be the responsible adult and watch it and monitor it like you're supposed to. That's a lot of work, but that's what we need to do. With the trash that is so easily available, dangers override privacy concerns. Find apps that monitor your teen's social behavior. If your child's primary usage is still on a PC, for $35 you can get something that'll monitor it. If you want the really good stuff, it'll cost you $300 or $400. But since they're probably doing everything on their phone anyway, it's a moot point. But they are available. We've used some of them. We worked at a children's home. Valerie was the librarian. We had to have those set up on our computers. They work most of the time. Sometimes they're a pain. The problem with most, I'm going to be honest with you, the problem with most filters is sexual and medical terms are often identical, depending on the context of the conversation. All right? And so if you put a really hard monitor in there, all right, and what it will do, it'll cut out about everything because so much is medical, all right? So there's some downsides of that. But if you're really concerned about where your child is going, the best ones are the ones that tell you where your child went. It doesn't stop them from going. It tells you where they went. All this is called media convergence. I have some more, but I'm going to save it for Thursday. I want you to remember that everything is available on the smartphone. We need to teach our children what is right and what is wrong. We want them to feel guilty about going to places they're not supposed to. Let me tell you, since I've got a moment, let me tell you a story that I'm almost ashamed to tell. I'm an Oklahoma Christian graduate. I'm real proud of what Oklahoma Christian represents. But about, I don't know, I think it may be 12, 13 years ago, maybe a little longer. It was they had their group that comes to school a week ahead of time for whatever that's called. My kids all did that at ACU. They come a week ahead of time to get oriented. Well, that was the first year they were going to give every kid a computer. And they did. They gave every child in that group a computer. These are the honor students, y'all. These are the best of the best. That night, they monitored where they went. Didn't tell them anything about the gun monitoring, but they monitored where they went. Of this group of students at Oklahoma Christian University, 75% of them went to a porn site that night. 75%. That's how tempting this is for our kids. For most of them, it was probably their first opportunity to ever do this. And they did. What was sad was they told them the next day in chapel that they caught them and talked to them about it. Did you know that night 50% of them went anyway? to did it again? That's how tempting this issue is with our children. So we've got to enforce the moral side of this with our children. Our children are going to find the materials somewhere. I'll be honest with you. I grew up out in the country. If I needed a dirty magazine, if I wanted one, I could go look in the ditch because somebody was always throwing them out in the ditch over there. I don't know why. It didn't make sense to me to throw dirty magazines out in the ditch. Okay? But they were there to tempt me. All right? I always said the devil was doing it. All right? Our children have access to the bad stuff. We're not going to stop it. Can't stop it. We need to teach them what's right and wrong about it. And the only way you can do that is teach them what the Bible teaches and teach them the morals that you hopefully grew up with. I'm going to start there on Thursday. Tomorrow, I'm preaching a sermon about how to be a good Christian parent. Those that have heard it before think it's very helpful. I hope you'll be back for that. And on Thursday, I'll start off with how our kids develop morally, and I'll conclude with video games and things of that sort. I'll tie everything else that I haven't covered together. If you have anything in particular you want me to attempt to talk about on Thursday, I do have 2 days to prepare. There's a good chance I'll talk about it, if I can. I will not talk about something I'm not familiar with, okay? But if it's something that I am considered knowledgeable in, I will talk about it on Thursday, what it is. Thursday's a loose array of various things. Anybody got any questions right now they want to answer before I say a prayer and we get ready for the kids to come in? Yes, ma'am. Most experts, she asked, when should a kid get a cell phone? Most experts claim 11 to 12. 11 to 12 is what most experts claim. Okay, all right. I think 13 is a good age. Teenage thing. You're gonna be hard pressed to go any lower than that. Okay. And remember, because of the helicopter parent thing, the reason so many kids have phones initially was not because they wanted them, because their parents wanted them to have one. And there's a lot of safety issues there that are important. Okay, I'm going to say a prayer, then we'll be through. Thank you all for being such a wonderful audience tonight. Heavenly Father, thank you for this day. Thank you for the blessings of this day. Thank you for this opportunity we have to see how we can help our children, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren. Give us knowledge. Give us strength. Give us wisdom, because we need it so badly. It's my prayer in Jesus' name. Amen. There is handouts. I'll put them on the back table. They're right here in my hand.